WMFO in Medford.
Vicky, how you doing? How's the knee?
It's coming along, doctor, but still some soreness.
Well, let's see. You know, this soon after surgery, some pain is pretty normal.
I was hoping to get more painkillers. The first round worked great.
We're being very careful with those now. Prescription painkillers are opioids, same as heroin. It's easy to start taking them, not so easy to stop.
Last year in America, an average of 40 people died from opioid abuse every day. Long-term addiction has become America's newest health epidemic.
So no pills?
Vicky, you're doing great. So let's try these anti-inflammatories, plus your physical therapy. If the soreness doesn't continue to get better, give me a call.
For opioids, the smaller the dose prescribed and taken, the better. Because even a few prescription painkillers can sometimes go a long, wrong way. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the Orthopedic Trauma Association. Visit orthoinfo.org/prescription safety.
Can't cover it up. You can try, but but you can't get enough. You can try, you can try, but you can't cover it up. You feel high, so come on, keep it up. The desire, can you get enough? You can try, you can try, but you can't cover it up.
Welcome back to What's Happening. I'm Aaron.
Is it time?
That was the start of the fourth track, actually, by Lily Black. Off of their brand new album, Cover It Up. They had their CD release party on Friday. And this is a great, great album.
Yeah.
And I have a great guest in studio.
How you doing? Will Daly.
Welcome.
I'm glad to be here. Share the afternoon with you.
Absolutely.
Listen to new music.
Well, we've got plenty of that.
Yeah.
So, let everybody know a little bit about you.
Well, I'm a singer-songwriter and from Boston. And I have lived here my whole life and kind of been a professional musician for the past 10 years and put out a record a couple months ago and put out another version of it on Friday. The album's called Golden Walker. And here I am tonight after just having a barbecue at my sister's.
If you want to say hi to them, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Megan. Hi, Joe. Aiden and Tallulah. And I got the jet early and that helped clean up. So thank you.
Not a problem. So, always ask, growing up,
yeah,
what'd you listen to in the house? What influenced you to get into music? And why'd you pick the guitar?
Well, the guitar came, so many instruments were thrusted upon: piano, trumpet, violin. And then my mother started dating this guy who had a guitar. And I just thought, like, I had this gateway to another world, a world I always wanted to go to. And it's just like the adventure presented itself to me. And there it was. And I just stayed focused on that instrument at that moment, about 8 years old. And I think growing up, music, it was everything. I had a lot of step parents and step siblings and step cousins and half siblings and everyone's favorite kind of. I was just always drawn to whatever their favorite was at the moment and just thinking about it, whether it be, you know, my stepsister loving Mariah Carey, or my older step cousin loved Van Halen, and his brother gave me Sticky Fingers by Rolling Stones, and my stepfather loved Neil Young, and so that was, and James Taylor and stuff like that. My mother loved show tunes, and I just kind of ended up with a mix of all of that. Now, it's easier to call myself a songwriter because I don't know what genre to fit into. Not only rock, but sometimes I just like to make psychedelic music. And
you're an eclectic mix.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a problem, I think, when you get out there in the business to not choose like a folk or rock or indie or pop or anything. If you don't really choose, it's harder to market and get out there and work. There's certain magazines, blogs, playlists, clubs that are made for certain genres, but
hit them all.
And that's what I've been doing, and it's actually been great. You know, I can go open up for a jam band or play with a jam band. I can go play with an indie rock band and find someone to connect with. That's the best part about all of it.
Look at the great Linda Ronstadt.
Yes.
Unfortunately, she's not well now, but look at her. 5 octaves.
Yeah.
And did almost every type of music.
She really did.
So what would you call her? An eclectic mix.
She's Linda Ronstadt.
Well, besides that, yeah. But her music is an eclectic mix.
I know.
Of
she's the
everything.
One and only.
So
it's a great point.
You're the Boston version.
Of Linda Ronstadt. I am Boston's Linda Ronstadt. Thank you.
Except for the male version.
I know, but I should make bumper stickers that say Boston's Linda Ronstadt.
Or Boston's eclectic mix. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you want it, I can do it.
Yeah. And I get joy out of just writing things and I just don't want to go through this life not having tried something on musically.
So as we were coming up the stairs.
Yeah.
We're talking about a big set of awards coming up.
Mm.
And you've been nominated for?
Three Boston Music Awards. For songwriting, for vocals, and for video of the year for my song called Bad Behavior. Thank you.
I'm borrowing that from a great Boston radio host, Larry Glick.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. What a great man he was.
Indeed.
And, you know, you always give the round of applause, so...
Thank you. Thank you very much. Awards are nice. People put a lot into awards. People get upset about awards. People get overly upset, overly excited. Awards are great. Awards are a reflection of a business, not of an art form. And I think if you get too upset about it, you rob yourself of the art form. And if you focus too much on it, you rob yourself of the art form. So it celebrates a business. It celebrates what works for business, whether it be the Boston Music Awards or the Oscars and the Grammys. The best album never wins. It's impossible. But the album that, you know, albums that are nominated or acts that are nominated for Songwriter of the Year, Song of the Year, Album of the Year, it's a reflection of what helps the business stay alive so that artists have a chance to connect and use that business to connect to people quickly.
It's also a sign of a time frame.
Exactly.
That's not of your whole career.
Right.
And there are many people, talking about the Oscars, who had unbelievable performances and they went a different way.
Yeah.
Same thing with music.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have the New England Music Awards, the Boston Music Awards, but also what the artists in Massachusetts have. It's college radio.
Mm.
So your music is heard.
Yeah.
And indeed. That's the important thing.
Indeed. Absolutely. And it's a unique place to be from because like you said, the representation of all the college radio in Boston, but also just all the colleges and all the influence that are in this city. And I really feel like now more than ever, Boston is getting a little bit more connected with each corner of itself, historically and presently. And all that is making a wonderful art and a stronger community and a stronger city. And it's going to take a while. It's not an easy place for an artist to live. You really take a couple punches if you try to be a professional artist, musician in Boston.
There are a lot of them, though. There are a lot there of people are. Who are becoming professionals, and that's their livelihood.
Yeah.
But go back to the awards for a second about, you know, the momentary... Now, and being hurt.
Yeah.
We're Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Red Sox disappointed us, but always gave us fun, but disappointed mm-hmm. us for 86 years.
Mm-hmm.
And now Boston is just taken off.
Yeah.
And right now they're having a great season.
Mm-hmm.
It's not over yet. So you go from, you know, they say year to year or game to game.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with winning or losing an award, because that doesn't stop you from performing your next gig just because you didn't win the award.
Absolutely not. And the feeling from winning an award to the feeling of playing an amazing show and really connecting with a room full of people are completely two totally different things, and one has so much more power than the other. One is this nice little thing, and it's great, and it helps you to connect to some people, but nothing beats playing or performing in front of people or being in the studio with a bunch of your peers and creating something that wouldn't have existed without that moment. So time marches on. The day continues. Tomorrow still comes.
What's like last night? I mean, I went to Rock and Roll for Recovery.
Mm. What's that?
That is a great new foundation and new organization started by Joe Maffey. He and his wife lost their son a couple years back to opioids. And as a matter of fact, he was featured on my show a couple years ago, but he was featured on, I think, Channel 25.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is, and they had the benefit last night, and I'll let you know who was there in a second, but they're going to take the funds and get rides for people who are in crisis or getting cleaned up to doctor's appointments, to medical doctor's appointments, counseling, and even if you have to go to court.
Mm.
So they're going to provide the rides.
That's beautiful.
And they're going to be working with a couple of different companies, but they're going to provide the rides so you don't have to worry about it. And as he said last night, because I was down with the musicians, and he said, you know, you can't beat the government. You can't beat the pharmaceutical companies. And you can't save everybody unless you're doing it one person at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're going to do.
That's beautiful.
And they made a great amount of money last night. It was sold out beyond...
Where was it?
It was in Waltham. It was the... let's see. It was... right here in front of me. It was at the American Legion.
Mm-hmm.
You had David Hull of the Joe Perry Project. You had Jeff Levine of Hall & Oates. You had Joe Maffey and his band, Kevin Graham, Dave Kasem, Dave Sebelia, Al Dore, and headlining, the one and only, and great friend, James Montgomery.
Oh, lovely.
Put on a show and a half, and... that's what it's all about.
Right.
Giving back to the community that mm-hmm. made, you know, he's been a percussionist his whole life. Mm. And it's called Mighty Drums. Mm-hmm. And it's the only way to give back. And since they weren't, give back in honor of their son's memory.
Yeah.
And do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I was floored by mm-hmm. all the people that were there. And mm. it just went off really well. And that's what it's about. You know, they were networking. They were yeah. talking to each other. I mean, who can we, who's going to play
that.
With whom?
Right.
You know, on the next album, they were talking about it.
Right.
You know, how can we get together? What can we do? And I see that with many of the artists locally.
Mm-hmm.
Not the ones who go in, do their set, and walk out.
Yeah. But
the ones who stay around and listen to the set and listen to somebody else, and you never know who you're going to find to work with.
Right.
Whether it's today or tomorrow. You know, they may ask you to come up if they know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
That happens many times too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, with you being a writer and a producer and, well, an entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
From Boston.
Yes.
Right. It's important. Who have you worked with that you've loved working with, and who would you like to perform with? And it could be anybody, or who would you have liked to, or in the future, it could be anybody from any time frame.
Yeah. I've gotten to play with so many amazing people. I mean, there's a song on my new record. It's a duet between me and Tanya Donnelly, who's a friend and a hero and inspiration and kind of a guiding light just as a person to me. And we do a duet on my record called Ultimate Companion. So, you know, in the way there's a dream come true, I've gotten to play with Roger McGuinn, Eddie Vedder, Jacob Dylan, G Love, bunch of wonderful people. T-Bone Burnett, worked with T-Bone Burnett, John Mellencamp, and Willie Nelson. So, you know, and then here in Boston, I've produced a bunch of wonderful acts. I'm working with someone right now, Samantha Farrell, a wonderful singer and songwriter in person. Produced some songs for Ruby Rose Fox. And
unbelievable.
Yeah.
She is just unbelievable.
Yep. And I really, the other night I heard this new up-and-comer, Aubrey Haddard. She's great. And I like, there's so much great stuff in the hip-hop scene. There's like James Luttrell. My friend Cliff Notes, who's going to play with me in December, doing two nights at the Burn in December on the 14th and 15th. And Cliff Notes is going to play. And my friend from Albany, Girl Blue, she's going to play. So I feel like, you know, as long as I keep, to your point, as long as I keep working, as long as I keep playing, as long as I keep connecting, I never have to stop and think about who I want to play with, because it presents itself. I find myself, like you're saying, I find myself in the room next to a peer that inspires me and I want to work with them, or someone I grew up wanting to work with and I'm working with them or playing with them. Or, you know, I remember I was opening up for Eddie Vedder once for Hot Stove Cool Music and soundcheck. He's like, hey, do you know my song Wishlist? I said, sure. And then I'm playing five songs with him, and I've done that half dozen times. And so just keeping gas in the engine and keep heading down the road, and you just find yourself in these amazing places.
And you said you put on a show this summer and you chose...
Oh, no. It was Dalton and the Sheriffs.
Okay.
Were the ones that were on that. So I put this series of show together on the rooftop of Fenway before games. And we had Dalton and the Sheriffs, Sarah Borges, myself, Kingsley Flood, Latrell James, and City Rivals, a couple other acts as well. And it went great. And so you buy a ticket to this game, but you buy this special ticket where you go to a secret location at Fenway Park on the roof deck, this Vineyard Vines Garden area. And it went well. So we're going to be doing it again next year. And I also get to kind of curate Harpoon Fest, and I'm working on a couple other festivals, it's like just special show locations around Boston where I can kind of advocate for the independent artist from New England.
Well, make sure that you join my What's Happening page, because any guest I have on,
yeah,
I promote their gigs and their shows and events.
Absolutely.
And have you grabbed anybody for your next Fenway one next year?
No, we're still closing the books on that one and just measuring like how it worked out. Because it's, first of all, the president, this all came from the president of the Red Sox, Sam Kennedy. He saw me play one summer, a couple summers ago, and became a fan of me. And then we were just talking about ways baseball could help art and how important music is for any community. And Fenway being so strong, how can Fenway help artists, but also the artists lend more variety to Fenway and more excitement to Fenway. And this is what we came up with. And so today, this year is the first year of doing it. So we're like, still have to figure out
how did it work
and how to improve upon it.
I think it would be cool to have a festival. You know, you have all these other festivals around Boston.
Yeah.
And you don't have Boston talent there.
I just did one 2 weeks ago. It was Festival at the Farm, and it was half New England acts and half national acts. And there was a brilliant festival. It was beautiful. And had this great, great vibe. So they're making an effort. But you are right. I would like to see something that's all. And the one that is Harpoon Fest, which takes place in May. But that's a beer fest with music. And the question is, are they, now that they've gotten bigger and bigger, are they going to turn into a music fest about the beer?
Well, you have the ear of Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah.
You know, doing a half and half.
It's true.
Or a... We have, let's see, baseball's 4 to 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
One game a month of local and national.
Yeah.
That would be really, really cool.
That's kind of what we did. We did 2 months. We did two shows a month almost.
But yeah. That makes sense.
It's really cool.
And, you know.
And then you get to go to the game after the show. You see a 45-minute set by some local, you know, New England artist. And you go to... And everyone people who came, it was a little confusing to explain what you're happening. You got to come to the ballpark an hour earlier, but you have this amazing experience in the ballpark, and then you go watch the game, and everyone had an amazing experience doing it this summer.
Especially this year.
I know, this year is magical.
It is, and...
And we're watching something special with Mookie Betts, something historical about him.
Mookie Betts, seeing with J.D. Martinez, mm-hmm. even Holt.
Yeah.
Brock Holt is coming out of... You know,
yeah.
He's not an everyday player, but when he comes in to pinch hit.
Yeah. Well, the management of pitch hitting, too, has been unbelievable. It's like he gets production out of these choices. It's unreal.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who he puts up for a pinch hitter.
I know. But and you, like you said, we've been through, you know, I remember in the 90s, you know, thinking that, oh, this is what Boston baseball is all about, suffering. And now it's just this different thing since 2004.
Well, see, growing up, I had the opportunity to watch the Celtics and watch the Bruins.
Yeah.
So, I knew what winning was about.
Yeah.
But with all the teams, the only team that hasn't won a championship, the soccer team, but they've been to the finals, you know, umpteen
mm-hmm.
times.
Mm-hmm.
But this period of time, which is almost 20 years,
mm-hmm.
Has been very special. And I've seen how, now you're mentioning, you know, sports and music. Well, I've seen how our teams, and we've had two, and one was national and mm-hmm. world, and the other one was local,
mm-hmm.
Tragedies.
Mm-hmm.
And how our sports teams helped us get through it. We didn't forget about it, but they helped us get through it.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us something else to think about. And while we're working on these others, it gave us something to enjoy.
Yeah.
The Patriots did that 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Big Poppy and his unmentionable statement, other than what he said was true from the heart.
Yeah.
And the FCC let him say what he had to say because it was from the heart. It was not meant like some of the entertainers out there.
Right.
And did that bring the community together? Absolutely.
Yeah, it was very Boston.
You know.
For a Dominican Republic man to connect, the way he's connected with this city.
Well, the community, Dominican community
is huge.
He's so
brilliant like
here.
That. Yeah, but he's brilliant the way he's so worldly and he's a wise guy.
You know.
Wise man. Wise guy is the wrong word. Who's wise man?
But, you know, you've got, you know, we've also had, I think, three rookie coaches win championships in Boston.
It's true.
We've got a rookie manager over at Fenway Park.
I know. All right, let's not talk about it anymore. It's freaking me out. We're getting ahead of ourselves.
No. He's done what he's done so far.
This is amazing.
It's amazing. I'm not putting it beyond that, but what he has done with his...
One win away from franchise record. That's a big deal.
That's tonight, huh? Tonight. In Cleveland.
Yeah.
Against his former coach.
That's unreal.
You know.
It's unreal.
I mean, we lost last night, but they try to come back.
I know it. I know, they don't even need to.
I'm still trying to find the how many times the Red Sox have been down since the first inning.
Yeah.
And have come back to win the game.
I'd like to see the season summary of all the cool stats like that. Like you're saying.
Oh, look at three grand slams.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this is just.
Yeah.
But then again, you're working on a triple. You're working on a triple crown for the Boston Music Awards.
Yeah, I suppose. I would like the director of the music video to win a music award. That'd be good. He worked really hard on it. We worked hard on it, but he worked the hardest. It's an animated video, so.
And those are always the hardest.
Yeah, and he put a lot of love into it and a lot of thought. Bless you.
Excuse me. So, the music that you write and perform, you know, being everywhere,
right,
which is fantastic. What do you have for shows coming up?
I just finished a bunch of shows. I played a bunch of festivals all around the country all summer. I'm playing at the Town and the City Fest in Lowell in October on the 19th. I believe I'm playing New York City on the 7th of November. And then I go to United Kingdom in France and play for about 2 weeks. And I come home in December, and I just have these two homecoming shows at the Burn, December 14th and 15th, to kind of celebrate and wrap up the year and have a party two nights in a row. And so I'm really excited about that. It's kind of it's like the anchor date in my mind, playing the Burn. Like it's like the finish line of this year, and it's exciting to do two nights in a row because you get to kind of build one night off the other. And that's it. And I'm excited to go back to France and the United Kingdom. And yeah.
You're listening to What's Happening on WMFO 91.5 FM. I'm Aaron.
I'm Will Daly.
So, Will, if you had advice for artists out there, up and coming or even current artists, to have gigs all over the place and to get their music out there.
Yeah.
What would you advise them?
That's a good
question. Contact you.
Yeah. you really need to, this is going to sound simple and obvious, but connect with people. The people that are in your fan base, the music you make doesn't have to be for everyone. It has to have an intention for you. And then you have to go find your people. You have to go find, you know, someone would say your audience. But you really got to find your people, the people who needed that intention, who need to hear its sonic and lyrical qualities and the combination that they made in this thing that only exists because you dreamed it up and you made the right choices to get it down onto tape or up on stage. There's enough people out of 7 billion that need to connect with it. And you have to give yourself enough opportunities to find them. It's not going to come from a post online. It's not going to come from, you know, just radio or just press or just anything. It's going to come from believing it and advocating for your art. That's what I would say.
It's just what they need to hear.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a lot of great artists locally.
Yeah.
And it's tough because many venues are closing.
Mm-hmm.
How are you finding that?
I'm always trying to look forward, not backward. I think doing it for a living helps because I don't have time to be nostalgic about anything that happened in my career in the past. It has to be what's about happening now and what's happening tomorrow. I've also found that people complain about whatever generation is coming up, but a lot of that generation is welcoming me into their houses, and they're having these pop-up shows or these different kind of events in basements, and I go play those. I go play by myself with my drummer. We go into someone's apartment, and we do these concerts everywhere that are off the grid, and things change. Things change, and I wanna be alive for the changes as much as I was alive for the way it was, and I want to be alive for the way it's going to be, and be present and be making art in all those situations. So I'm grateful for all the time I've had in things that are gone, and I'm sad for anybody losing their jobs, but I'm also excited for them to have to face the change, because one thing I know being in this business of 10, 15 years is that it's always been changing under my feet, and the ground has never been secure, never. So I'm never surprised. I'm never sad. I always know what's happening.
Yeah, any stories from, because you mentioned Willie Nelson, you mentioned a couple other people. Any stories you'd love to share about your experiences? Or can share?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember I was doing this session with T-Bone Burnett for a musical that Stephen King and John Mellencamp wrote called Ghost Brothers of Darkland County. And they were making a record of the musical before they tried to bring it to Broadway. And on the record, they had Elvis Costello, Taj Mahal, Roseanne Cash, all these great session players like Mark Ribot, who's probably one of my favorite guitarists. They also had Jacob Dylan and Ryan Bingham. And Ryan Bingham had just won an Oscar. And I was just getting, this was the first amazing thing that happened to me in my career where I thought, this is some sort of coup that I'm in this room, that I got placed to be one of the vocals on this record, this ensemble record. And the first day, you know, everyone's going through these demos. And the guy who advocated for me to be on the record was there. But I'm sure other than T-Bone Burnett, no one knew who I was. And I thought, for the first day, I was like, someone's going to think I'm the person that gets everyone coffee. I'm the runner of the studio. And I waited all day, and I was just freaking out. Like, I don't want to introduce myself or be overly talkative. I just want to ease in the session. I was really nervous. Like, any minute someone's going to ask me to get them a coffee or a drink or go on a food run. And I said, all right, the best way to cope with this is to get up at one of the breaks and say, I'm going to make some tea. Would anybody like some? And just kind of beat it to the punch and make tea. And Sheryl Crow said, I would love some tea. And so I was talking, oh, would you like green tea with some honey and blah, blah, blah. And she was looking at some of the music that was written out, and we're talking about it. And I brought her the tea, and I said, oh, I've been working on that song too. I've one line. She says, yes, you play this part. You're singing the role of this guy. So she knew who I was, and I was like, wow, that is so pro. She knows everyone's role in the thing. And then I watched her do her first vocal takes, which were shaky. And I only say they're shaky because it was the first time in my career where I realized, oh yeah, everyone's first couple takes, like, you're getting your feet wet sometimes, you know? And just the way she went about methodically getting in the zone and getting herself ready to do that take, it's that the work ethic mixed with soulfulness and attention to detail in musicality, it just kind of seeped into my skeletal structure and stayed there.
So it helped you feel more comfortable when you finally had to sing?
Absolutely. And to this day, when I got to get up and sing again, I think I'm not ready, or I don't know yet, or the direction isn't clear from the producer. Make a cup of tea. Sit down and
call Cheryl up and say, hey, yeah, you know.
Exactly. I'm doing it again.
How
can you give me some
advice?
But yeah, just something like that. It's like, it's just my continuing education, and it still is, you know.
Well, music's always evolving.
It is, and that's, you know, that goes back to my point about things passing and clubs closing and things ending. And everything's evolving and everything's shifting, and you just got to keep dancing. If you're standing still, it really hurts when the ground shifts beneath you. But if you're always dancing, then you're ready for it.
Can't go wrong with that.
No.
Because you're challenging yourself every day.
Yeah.
And succeeding.
Yeah.
Because if you're there for the next opportunity.
Indeed.
But you said, mentioned getting out there and doing the, you know, they've got the Porch Fest, they've got the basement.
I love doing those. Yeah. See, that stuff's great.
You're not saying, okay, if there's no venue to go to, I'm not going to get out there and perform. And you pick up more fans and people who will listen.
Yeah.
Then you would, you know, I mean, yeah, there's some great people who play our subways.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great people. But there's only so much room to do that. So with these house parties, so to speak, sort of taking it back to some of the old, well, they had all the great performers who used to just all get together at different people's homes, you know. You know, like the Rat Pack, you know, they go to one another, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they performed together, and they were all different. So you can't be leery of diversity. Mm-hmm. I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, indeed.
So you've got the shows. You've been doing it for 10 years. Are you looking for anybody else to produce?
All the time. I'm going to finish working with Samantha Farrell, and then I kind of production is a way for me to keep all my wheels greased when I finish my own record, and then I got to work it for 2 years. I still like staying in the studio, so the next time I get to the studio isn't when I'm making my own record, and I'm just learning from other artists and mixing up with them. And so I'm going to finish up some songs with Samantha Farrell in the next couple weeks, and then probably find someone to produce in November, December.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody thinks they have something,
yeah,
would you be adverse to them reaching out to you?
Not at all. Or yeah.
How could they? How can
WillDaily.com? Will Daily on Twitter, Will Daily Official on Instagram, Will Daily on Facebook. You just got to spell Daily, D-A-I-L-E-Y. You got to put the E in there. If you don't put the E in there, I don't know where it takes you, but that's not me. And they might be surprised by you sending them music. So willdaily.com. Yeah.
Which is fantastic, because you take interest in somebody else and you never know where your next collaboration is going to be.
Exactly. Exactly.
But having been in the business the last 10, 15 years, although basically you've been in a lot longer than that, with starting off at, you know, as a youngster playing, and then probably I would assume you played with other people growing up.
Yeah.
What intrigued you about to keep going and make that? What really makes you who you are?
I mean, I still have to ask myself that every night before I fall asleep, but you know, I was pretty cognizant at a young age that I'm on a rock floating through space and how random that is. And the most magical aspect besides that randomness to me is music. So I wasn't going to squander my opportunity not participating in art in some way, in the art of music in some way. Much like yourself, right?
Well, I mean, I can't play a note, can't sing a note.
But you advocate for the notes.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
You fight for the notes.
Want to make sure that everybody should be heard.
That's a beautiful thing. I don't exist without you.
Well, you know, I've heard that from a couple different people.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I heard that from James Montgomery last night.
That's amazing.
You know.
That's amazing.
Tom Hauck of Telemore puts out a song a month.
Yeah.
And he says, without college radio and without us being there, it couldn't exist and couldn't be. And, you know, the hardest thing is to get yourself played. And, you know, you try to go to the commercial way and it just doesn't hit.
There's only so much real estate to get on a commercial radio.
But it's also a lot of more politics than trying to get it into college radio. Some people put out albums, and I know they're, you know, may put some words in there that they shouldn't. But of course, you know, if they're going to do that, we normally tell them to make a cleaner version and put it towards the end of the album, because the first two or three tracks are the only ones that are heard normally by the person who's in charge of music for the station. So you want to put your best foot forward.
I didn't do that on my last record. I just made it how I wanted to. Actually, it starts pretty soft and quietly.
And it did very well?
It's doing fine, yeah. Again, I'm just I work it until it finds its people.
Well, you know. Why don't we play a song by a local singer-songwriter, and then we'll get some of your music up.
Absolutely.
Penny in the Pond by the one and only Colette O'Connor. Enjoy.
Did you throw it all away?
Welcome back to What's Happening. I'm Aaron.
And we're back.
So, that was one of your tracks.
Yeah, Bad Behavior. That's the one that has the video nomination.
Great video.
Thank you.
They made you a character in your own video.
Yeah, I'm a cartoon, but it was really filmed with an iPhone. My part was filmed, and then he somehow made it fit into the... You know, the color palette of the rest of the thing, which is kind of like a noir Batman type of heist.
So, let everybody know where they can find you again.
WillDaily.com, WillDaily. And you can do like Will Daily anything, you know, Twitter, Facebook. It's Will Daily Official on Instagram and all those things, and Spotify. Phone Will Daily on Spotify, all that.
And you have something coming up in October.
I'll be in Lowell at the Town and the City Fest up in Lowell. And it's Kristen Hirsch is on that festival, Reckless Eric, Kingsley Flood, and then back here in Boston, Mole Somerville, at the Burn in December after my European dates.
So how do you find the audiences in Europe compared to the audiences here?
Very different. Very different. Extremely respectful. And grateful. But, you know, places like London and Paris aren't all that different. But, you know, you get out of the big metropolises. And it's different. There's a little bit more reverence. At the same time, I can understand how playing in America, you have to kind of cut your teeth and keep the audience's attention no matter what and keep rolling, and you develop these skills that sharpen your knives in the live setting to kind of keep the audience's attention, because Americans move fast.
Is that the reason why some of the great musicians... like Hendrix, mm-hmm. left the country to be found and then yeah. came back here because it was a different, if you do well over there,
right.
you hope you're going to do great here.
Yeah, well, and in the case of Hendrix, too, I mean, he's doing something extremely different. And it was dirtier and nastier, and he was a black man doing it. So there's maybe a little bit more room for acceptance over there. It didn't have the history that America has with black men trying to do something that was a white man's game. Or what they perceived to be a white man's game at the time. So there's a little bit more room for him to establish that brilliance there and bring it back here as this undeniable product. And I have lots of friends who do better over there. And I don't know. I personally don't want to be kind of like we were talking about the eclecticism of genres, but I don't want to belong to any one place. I want to be able to go anywhere with music. I'm grateful for any odd gig I have. In this year alone, I've played in front of 4,000 people. I've played in front of four in a place that should hold 400. So in each time, I'm grateful because I could be doing anything else. So.
Will Daly, I want to thank you for coming on
today.
I know the time went very quickly. We'll have you back on very soon. You're on What's Happening on WMFO in Medford. Yvonne will be on momentarily. So enjoy the rest of the week. Go Red Sox. And thank you again, Will.
Thank you.